Hello and thanks for joining us. I'm Carol Jenkins and the podcast is Black America on the Brink. We take a look at the issues facing Black America and what we need to do to make the best of it. It's an extension of our award-winning CUNY TV program, Black America. Our guest in a moment. It is our pleasure and honor to have in the studio Susan L. Taylor, goddess of publishing and of spirituality. I want you to know In the Spirit is still one of my favorite places to go to be uplifted. That was Susan Taylor's book. Of course, 27 years at Essence Magazine, the creator of everything, the music festival, all of the publishing, honored by all of the magazine associations, the first, right, Susan? You were the first African-American to be honored by the American Publishing Association.
That's true. Marcia Gillespie, who, you know, was my boss at Essence. I was actually at 37 years and led the publication for 27. On the editorial side, Marcia should have been first, but she was honored after me. Because what I built at Essence with a team was really built on the foundation that Marcia Gillespie created.
And she's fantastic. If you don't know her work, you should absolutely find it out. A pioneer. But 37 years at one company, and then coming to a point where you said goodbye. And now, in the news recently, the fact that that company that Ed Lewis and his co-founders, who were the business people behind that, I knew Ed when it was on a piece of paper, right? And he said, I'm going to do this. And he indeed did it. Then when he left, he sold it to Time Magazine, right?
That's correct.
To that empire. And what was that like, going into that universe, seeing that baby go into that universe?
You know what's so interesting? I have to tell you, so many people were angry that Essence sold to Time Inc. Clarence Smith and Ed Lewis were the two surviving of the four partners. You know how it can be. So.
Right.
They were so respectful. And I have to tell you, white folks can compensate you even far better than our sisters and brothers, our Black sisters and brothers. I had no idea that I could ever earn bonuses like that. If I ever got like a, you know, $25,000 bonus after taxes, you know, it was almost half of that, I was overjoyed. But Time Inc., really, they were very respectful of what we were building, and no one ever, ever intruded on the editorial content that we were creating.
So it was a melancholy, but good, I mean, melancholy for those of us outside who've said, wouldn't it be wonderful if it were Black-owned and going into the Time Inc. universe? But it had its advantages. You were able to do a lot of things with the Time Inc. money.
I don't know. Well, you know, those of us who had interest in the publication benefited from it. And that was always, you know, Ed's, I think, vision to build it to the point to sell it. And we know that that's what, you know, capitalists do. What's so extraordinary about this moment is that it was bought back
exactly
by a Black man. That never happens, Carol Jenkins. I can't think of any entity, maybe the Burrell Company, the Burrell Advertising Agency, and I don't even know if the whole of it was brought back by, bought back by an African-American group. I think it may be, I'm not sure, it might have been 51%.
So this is a unique situation.
Oh, it's unique and glorious. Essence is home. It's back home and bought by a man by the name of Richelieu Dennis, who is Liberian and educated in this country. But I tell you, he reached out to me, I want to say the day after the purchase, and he was so just respectful of Black women and how Black women need to be elevated and, you know, and they're going to be on mission and on course and move Essence in the right direction. That's his promise, you know, to the community.
Well, that's that. We'll be waiting to see what happens. And Vanessa DeLuca, of course, who is there and wonderful. And I understand that some of the people got partnerships or participate in the money
I know Michelle Ebanks, who's the president, did.
Yes.
I hope so for Vanessa. Vanessa worked with me when I was chief editor. You know, very, very smart, dedicated, phenomenal woman. So I'm just glad that Essence is back home and that the team is, I know they're overjoyed. They're packing up and moving now. They have to move out of Time, you know, Inc. Offices, and Richelieu is finding finding a space for them.
Well, that's great. We're so happy to hear that. Now, your life took a change. Actually, you started it while you were at Essence, this mentoring movement. Tell us about that. I was so touched when we spoke on the phone recently, and you told me about your kids and about poverty and about what you were attempting to do with this mentoring project.
You know, after Katrina just devastated New Orleans, and we lost so many friends and our colleagues who would help us with the Essence Music Festival, I said to the Essence family, we just can't go back to New Orleans as we were. We have to deepen this party with a purpose. It always had a deeper purpose, but we have to deepen the purpose. So many children were struggling and suffering. And so I said, what about Essence Cares? And we created Essence Cares. We launched it. And when I would speak about it, people all over the country were saying, we need that in our community. We need it in our community. We're losing our children. And I knew that I couldn't allow people all over the country to use the Essence brand, so I had to rename it. And that's where the name, the National Cares Mentoring Movement, emerged from. And it started in Atlanta. It was launched there as something that communities would do. The model was to recruit mentors, train them, and then deploy them to wherever they needed. Because when the call goes out to mentors, and I'm saying this to all of the folks who are of color out there listening, the first respondents are always white women, and then white men, and then black women and black men. And we know that more than any other group, it's our boys. It's our little innocents who are struggling and who need us. We need beautiful black men more than any, you know, other sector. And we need women, too. And we want, you know, white folks to continue to do what they've been doing. They're disproportionately, you know, white women are stay-at-home moms. So they have the time and sometimes the resources to mentor in ways that, you know, you have 2 cents and you've got, you know, Pookie in them trying to hang on.
Right.
We're taking care of everybody.
Right.
But, you know, when I realized that 80% of black fourth graders were reading below grade level, that's when I said, oh, it's time for me to leave Essence. Essence doesn't need me anymore. You know, we gave everything I learned there, I imparted to that next generation, including Vanessa, you know, Bush DeLuca, all the other editors. And so I was able to step away and really give myself to my community.
Right, so 80% reading below grade level. Some of the statistics on your website, in some cities, 80% of our boys drop out before finishing high school. And this is startling. Every day, 1,000 black children are arrested. Arrested, that is. I want to emphasize that. I mean, you hear about the figures, but when you put that 1,000 figure a day of our children being arrested...
You know, you see it in videos now. You see what happens to our young. You know what was so interesting to me, watching the celebration, and I put it in quotes, in Philadelphia after the Eagles won, and watching young people just run roughshod through the city, breaking windows, standing on awnings, you know, just turning over cars, setting fires. And the media covering it was like, oh my gosh, they're so enthusiastic. You know, they are really like a little over the top, maybe. If they were black children, they would have been shot.
Precisely.
You know, yeah, so this is what's happening to our young ones. The over-incarceration of African-Americans and the history of impoverishment has led to the crisis that is so deep today and deepening. And this is why we are doing this work, the National Cares Mentoring Movement, in 58 cities across the country with our leaders from Seattle down to San Diego, from Miami all the way up to Boston. We are... not everywhere, but we want to be. Everywhere where our children are struggling and suffering, with group mentoring protocols that really transform entire schools. That's the vision. Not just to train mentors and deploy them, but to build these transformational programs, which we have done in 4 cities, and now raising the money to replicate. So wherever our children are needing us, we can be.
Yeah, I was in a conversation with someone just recently who was talking about the U.S. Education Department, and this person functioning high up and says, please don't make me deal with anybody in the education department. The schools are a mess and everything takes forever, and black and brown children are being abused and neglected. And I suppose that's the way you feel too about the system nationwide.
You know, I was raised by a mother, a Trinidadian woman, who would say all the time, where there's a will, there's a way. And I believe that. That's been sort of my guiding philosophy with, you know, helping to build Essence and what I'm doing right now. But I think people think the problems are intractable. You know the billions of dollars that have been devoted to mentoring, yet the needle is not moving in the direction that it should.
And why is that?
That's a good question.
Because we've heard about mentoring for a long, long time. You know, your movement seems to be very, very effective. And so, but what about all of the other dollars and hours and effort that has gone into trying to save children? And you say the needle hasn't moved that far.
Well, a lot of young people have been elevated. There's no question about that. And we don't want mentoring organizations for whom we, you know, recruit mentors and deploy them to ever stop. But transformation hasn't happened. And I think it has to do with people working in silos and not together, and a fight for funding. And without the funding, they don't do the work. So what I'm saying is that people outside of our race, please stay. Stay with us, be our allies. But this movement to recover, to restore, this restorative movement for our children and parents who are struggling in poverty has to be led by people who look like the children we're trying to support. It has to be led by Black people, you know, and it hasn't worked well enough in the past, I think, because there really wasn't a protocol, there wasn't a curriculum, there wasn't an understanding of what poverty does to young people. So it's not enough to, Carol, just take a mentor and say, take this child out on Saturday and take them to the movies or the museum or to a game, a basketball game or a football game. Trauma resting in young people and living in poverty is traumatizing.
Let's talk about the poverty for a bit, because one of the things I know you're trying to change is for young people not to feel that it's their fault, you know, that this is something that they did or that their parents did or even their grandparents, that this is systemic and this country has a history of neglect and abuse that has created poverty today.
Centuries long from the time, it goes back to even the 1502 in Brazil when, you know, Africans were swept away from the west coast of our motherland and taken to Portugal and then to Brazil, and certainly 1617 here in this country. There's never been a plan to educate, you know, and move African-American people forward. And there's no real plan today. There is no plan, no holistic plan, and it has to be holistic. It's not just, if you can't read, how are you going to calculate? How are you going to pass tests? You know, if you're hungry, you can't sit still, you can't study. So this is, you know, it's a problem that is deep, and it's broad, and it can be solved in the wealthiest country in the world. So we are a learning organization, we're a collaborative organization, and we're working holistically with a whole host of partners. You know, I ask people to go on to our website, caresmentoring.org, and just see the work, see what we're doing, and see how you can help in your community.
And you say that it takes more than just spending a Saturday afternoon or taking a kid to the movie. Some of the examples on your website, one person who had been with the same child for 9 years and then became the groom in his wedding, and that kind of stick-to-itiveness. I don't know that our society allow for that kind of permanent, ongoing connection? And I think that's what you're talking about.
It does. It does allow for that, and that's what most mentoring organizations do. But I was at a White House meeting some years back, and I heard, you know, the then president of Big Brothers Big Sisters say that there were, oh, I think 13 million young people being mentored, and there were 3 million, sorry, young people being mentored and 13 million waiting. And there was no response to that. I said, disproportionately, they are Black children, Black and brown, but primarily Black, because brown people, Latinos, do family differently and better than we do. Papi may have 3 families, but all of them see him. You know, our challenge is that, we lost everything. We lost name, country of origin, food way, religion, you know, everything that was dear and familiar to us, family. Latinos did not lose family. We did. So what we're doing is we're knitting ourselves back together again. We are remaking ourselves, remaking our community. And what we're doing is doing this in a group mentoring format. So it's all school transformation. That's what our programmatic work looks like in 4 cities, and that's what we're trying to replicate, raising money to replicate.
Show us how it works. You take on a whole school.
Yes.
All the kids.
Right.
And
So in assemblies. So there are assemblies, and in some schools that are very large, we have two assemblies, two in one day. And we bring in phenomenal speakers like you, Michael Eric Dyson. You know, people come in and they speak to the hearts of the young people. Oprah Winfrey and Ava DuVernay gave us the film Selma so that young people could see what their arrival, though it may be a painful existence as some of them are experiencing, what it cost, what it meant to not be able to vote, you know, what it meant to be punished because you were trying to learn how to read. So the history is really important. So we have these assemblies where people who've been in poverty, who've been arrested, who've been incarcerated, who've been drug addicted, come in and speak about their recovery and how young people can also recover their lives and to not blame themselves or their parents for their situation. But the healing really takes place in what we call wellness mentoring circles. So if you were, say, with us in Chicago at Harlan High on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, you would see four psychologists, you'd see our program director and manager, and you would see about 17 to 20 mentors coming in, and all day long they're going into classrooms. So it's in-classroom, single-gender mentoring with a curriculum that starts with heritage so that we know who we are, moves on to spirituality so that we know that we're never alone, that there is something larger than us that we really can't explain. We call it spirit, God, Allah, Jehovah, a whole host of names. But it resides in us. It never leaves us. And if we relate to that, breathe with it, it will inform us and help us to be strong from the inside out. We teach wealth building because we spend every dime we make, you know, and from there we go on to how we speak to one another. We teach exercise and diet, what we should be putting into our bodies, even in food deserts where a lot of our young people live, you know, and it moves from there to public policy and media watch so that our young ones are looking at the media through a new lens. This is not the truth of who you are, who you see on the nightly news. You know, what you see of yourself, how you see yourself represented in some music, that's not the truth of who you are. We're not all kings and queens, but we really come from something that was destroyed by capitalism, by the greed that took all the resources, human and natural resources, from our motherland. And that's why there's such suffering there and here.
So the cultural picture of what our children get is not just in the news, but it's everywhere else too. It's in the feature programming that, I mean, how do you address that? Because the input is so total from the phones, from the videos, from, I mean, how do you change what's being taken in that way?
You know, it's consciousness shifting. So we're not going to stop, you know, producers from producing what they produce. That's not even our work. It's really helping our young people to just see what they see differently. We're not saying don't look at it, but look at it through a different lens and try to understand what it's doing to you, that it's not soul nourishing. What it's doing is it's demonizing you. It's speaking about you incorrectly, and that's not who you are. You know, so when you look at it through that lens, and then young people will begin to demand something different, or they won't be spending their money there. What we're trying to do is really create a self-supporting, unified community, a community, the beloved community that Dr. King spoke about and so many others. Gwendolyn Brooks, the great poet laureate of Chicago, said, "We are each other's keeper. We are each other's harvest. We are each other's magnitude and bond." And that's what we're really trying to regenerate. We're not in this alone. And we able, stable black folk, we have you. We are at your back. And we're going to hold you up. But we have a contract with you. You have to keep your behind in the chair. We have to make sure you have food to eat. We have to make sure that, you know, don't self-medicate before you come to school. There's another way to manage your stress and your pain. And it really is through breathing, meditation, and a knowing so deep that the Holy Spirit is alive in you.
That's one of the things that I love about the work that you do. You have said that the reason you do it is that you believe in goodness. You believe that this can happen. So many of us have lost faith. You know, we don't believe in goodness and spirituality and breathing and making the best of it.
Look at our lives. You know, I just grew up the way here, Park Avenue and 116th Street. You know, and if people didn't believe, we can go back generations. You know, how many generations ago, if in the 1800s they didn't believe that they could live outside of slavery, we wouldn't be here. We would still be enslaved. So we have to hold a high vision. You know, we're more than we seem. That's the whole of it. They were human and divine. But we can go to a church, a temple, a mosque, and sit in there forever, for days, and never come to know our divinity. You know, never come to know that there is a power that resides in us that we just need to tap into. How do you do that? You don't have to go to a mosque or a temple or a church. You just have to be still and listen. You know what our young people tell us? They tell us that there's no place in their lives where there's quiet. The mind, the heart, the soul requires quiet so that you can hear what is always often referred to as that still, small voice that is always, because life is biased on the side of growth, you know, and development. But if you can't stop, turn off the music, as frightening as that may be, we walk in the door, we turn everything on because we don't know how to be in the quiet. And just take a few minutes. You know, I would come home from work and I would be shouting at my daughter, turn on, what are you doing? Television's on, you haven't done your homework. The house is a mess. And one day somebody corrected me and said, that's how you speak to your child? I gave that brother fever. Don't you tell me to speak to my daughter. Speaking to my daughter the way my mother spoke to me and I'm doing mighty fine. Well, I heard him. I stopped coming home from work like that. I would come in. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment, so there was nowhere to go. I slept in the living room. She had the bedroom. I would go in the bathroom, and I would sit on the edge of the tub and just leave Essence down on 43rd Street, and I lived on 63rd Street, and just sit in quiet for a moment. And then I'd come out and say to my daughter, how was your day? Mommy, you don't really care. You don't want to know. That was really her first reaction. Mm-hmm. But staying with that, my daughter went from being a failing student to the valedictorian of her high school graduating class. Not because she did anything differently. I did something differently.
Sure, sure.
Our children are to be honored.
Right. That's one of the things that I often say, that what I find missing is compassion for our own children. You know, that it's, you know, they so often are doing the best they can, and we're like, tough, you know, you have to do it, you have to, you know, you have to be better somehow. So it's, for me, it's compassion that I think that we need to show our children.
That's the word. That's the essential thing that's missing in the world, compassion. You know, we walk past homeless people. You know, I said to you, if I wasn't doing this work on behalf of our children, it would be on behalf of our black men. No matter what city I go to, I see the same thing, and it breaks my heart. We're talking about the men on whose back this country and the whole Western Hemisphere is built. You know, the givers of life and wealth, the ones whose free labor created the wealth of the Western Hemisphere, who went off to war and came back to nothing, segregation and no jobs, no housing. And it's caused them to, some of them, to lose their minds in every city, and it's not right. And we have to write that. We have to write it.
The title of this limited podcast series is Black America on the Brink. And I always say, I don't say whether it's great or bad, you know, disastrous. What do you think it is?
Recovery.
Recovery.
On the brink of just restoration and moving into our greatness. And it's really on us. It's not about what they do or what they don't do. You know, this country has never had a positive plan for black people. We have to have one for ourselves. We have to link arms and aims. We have to learn how to love ourselves again. We have to learn how to love and trust one another again. And we have to be loving, and we have to be trustworthy. You know, we have to really fall in love with life and realize that it is a gift. And it's never going to be exactly the way we want it to be. You know, no matter who you are, whether you're Barack Obama or Carol Jenkins, you know, people who are well-known, Oprah Winfrey, you're going to have tears on your pillow in your life. That's life. Life is about, you know, what is it? It's losing, it's gaining, it's laughter, it's tears, it's sadness, it's joy, it's all that stuff in the mix. But essentially, life is about growth. And it's about developing the God-given gifts so that you can create the new world that's on the way. That's what I'm holding on to. There's a new world on the way, and we're giving birth to it.
Susan L. Taylor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, this has been my joy. You know, you're one of my favorite people and voices in the whole wide world.
Thanks for being with us for Black America on the Brink. Watch our award-winning television show, Black America, on CUNY TV. And thanks to our crew, executive in charge, Susan Iger, producers, Audra West and Christy St. John, engineers, Jack Horowitz and Sarah Fishman. Our music theme is by Tyreek Keys, Washington. And we come to you from the radio studios of City University of New York. Let's talk again soon.